gotta understand something here. This music is the glue of the world. It holds it all together. Without this, life would be meaningless.
What are you getting so crazy about? It's just music.
In 1978, a band from Rockford, Illinois, traveled to Japan and recorded and released one of the greatest live albums of all time. I'm Greg Kott from the Chicago Tribune.
And I'm Jim DeRogatis from WBEZ and Columbia College. Cheap Trick celebrates the 35th anniversary of Live at Budokan, live in our own studio. Then we review the new album from Janelle Monáe. That's all coming up on Sound Opinions.
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and now it's time for some music news.
Shine bright like a diamond. Shine bright like a diamond. Shine bright like a diamond.
We're beautiful like diamonds in the sky.
Palms rise to the universe as we moonshine and Mali. Feel the warmth, we'll never die. We're like diamonds in the sky.
Greg, that's Rihanna with the song Diamonds, which references in its lyrics Mali, as do recent pop songs by Miley Cyrus and Kanye West. Molly can be used as slang for the drug MDMA, which was known as ecstasy back when you and I were going to raves in the early 90s. This drug, by any name, has long been associated with electronic dance music, but it's in the spotlight even more lately. There was an interesting story recently in the New York Times from Ben Cesario and James McKinley, which is talking about the impact it may have on one of the biggest public offerings the music world has ever seen. SFX Entertainment is about to go to Wall Street with a $300 million IPO. It was started by this guy, Robert Silliman, who had a hand in bringing Clear Channel into becoming Live Nation and becoming the dominant force in the rock concert, pop concert world. Now he wants to have a global company to control electronic dance music on the arena level across the world. But the connection to deaths from overdoses from Molly, MDMA, ecstasy is making people wonder how Wall Street will respond. Will people put money in this venture given that 7 people in the U.S. alone have died since March from overdoses of this drug or from dehydration after dancing until they dropped from this drug. Now, as music lovers, we have to point out drug use is not unique only to the electronic music world. In the jam band world, at Bonnaroo, since 2002, there have been 10 drug-related deaths. But the size of these dance concerts is one of the things that makes these deaths jump out to the media. It's going to continue to be in the headlines, and it's going to be really interesting to see if it impacts a business worth $4.5 billion a year.
All right, Tokyo!
Listening to Sound Opinions, and that song is Hello There, the aptly named opening track from At Budokan, a live album by our guest this week, Cheap Trick. 35 years ago, the band recorded concerts in the famed Nippon Budokan Hall in Tokyo, Japan, and now it's widely considered to be one of the best live albums of all time.
Greg, Robin Zander, Tom Peterson, Rick Nielsen, and his son Dax Nielsen, who replaced the original drummer Bun Carlos, joined us in the studio recently to play a few songs from that record and to talk about it. It's important to note that in 1978, Cheap Trick was not a super popular band here in the U.S., but somehow it managed to pack 12,000 screaming fans into that Budokan theater. We started our conversation by talking to Rick Nielsen about why they decided to go to Japan to record an album.
At the end of 76, we recorded our first record. It didn't come out till 77. But in 77, when Queen came to America for their tour, they were going to have Thin Lizzy open the shows. Well, the first two shows, Thin Lizzy couldn't make it. And the guys in Queen had actually heard the pre-release Cheap Trick album. They liked it a lot. You know, can you imagine those guys? I couldn't imagine them sitting around listening to it, but but they did. They liked it, and they asked us to open the shows for them. So we did it in Milwaukee and Madison. The Japanese press was, of course, they're huge in Japan, so they were there to see Queen. They actually liked us, and they actually asked us if we would write an article for about touring with Queen, you know, because, you know, get a different perspective on the thing. So I actually wrote a two-page article for Ungunk Senka and Music Life. About a couple months after that, somebody said, "Oh, your pictures in, you know, little pictures of us on tour with Queen, you know, like probably, you know, 1 2-by-2 picture of us," and saying that we opened for them. And then the interview, and then all of a sudden we started getting fan mail from Japan.
And also, they started writing these comic books. And we were in the comic books in the Queen stories and stuff. We were interacting and stuff, and we'd get this in our office.
I had to tune Brian May's guitar, I think.
Yeah. We're 5 minutes into this
like
chat.
Me and Freddie Mercury holding hands down the street or something weird.
We're 5 minutes in, we've learned two trivial facts that are great. You know, Cheap Trick owes its career partly to the predecessor of anime and to the fact that Rick Nielsen was almost a rock journalist writing.
The music had nothing to do with it. It was just Rick's article.
Oh, there was that.
Yeah, right. Well, so they liked our band, the Japanese. And then a few months later, after our record had come out, the first album had come out, Kiss asked us to tour with them. And once again, the Japanese press were there to see Kiss. We got as much press as they did from them being at the show. And by then, we were getting like tons of fan mail. And our first record, we had a number one single. I think we had Clock Strikes 10 was number one over there. And I Want You to Want Me, the studio version, that kind of wimpy version on the studio, was actually turned into a hit, kind of a hit single. And then we just got deluged with fan mail and requests for magazines. We were in all these different, you know, they come over and shoot pictures of us, and then like Robin said, you know, put anime with it. And then,
in spite of all that stuff, though,
yeah,
it really didn't prepare us for the weight of it, because when we got there, it was much more than we thought it was.
Yeah, well, we were asked, "Hey, do you guys want to tour Japan?" Well, okay, well, we'd hate to interrupt our tour of Iowa to do that, but yeah, okay, we'll do it. And so we had a Russian promoter. His name was Danny Nanishkis. And they sent us the tickets. I think we had coach seats, and we got to finally landed in Tokyo, and there was like about 5,000 people on top of the roof of the terminal screaming and yelling.
Wow.
And we didn't know they were for us. We thought there was somebody famous on the plane.
And the whole time we were there, we couldn't really socialize. We were always, you know, had guards with us, and we were transported in mail trucks, and they even blocked out the windows of our hotel rooms so that nobody could see in. And it was really pretty crazy.
Not bad for four guys from Rockford, Illinois.
Yeah.
Well, part of the thing was, too, they didn't really have radio where they could play songs. But there were record stores obviously selling your records. And there was a big visual element that went along with what you guys were doing. Like, I remember as an opening act, you guys didn't look like four guys who just rolled off the couch ever. It was always kind of... There was a visual aspect to the show.
Well, four individuals. It's sort of like Queen. It's sort of like Kiss.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, it's like it wasn't just the lead singer and three guys that wanted to be the lead singer. You know, it was like people say, "Rick, you're just like that idiot that we see on the cover." I said, "Well, because I'm that idiot that's on the cover." You know, I never tried to look as handsome as you two guys.
They never had national radio like that that played rock music. That's true, but they did get around it by having, like, they would have a storefront window and put their DJs in there and put speakers out into the street, and people would just mass around this to hear music.
They'd have like an English top 10 or like a Top of the Pops, you know, the UK top 10 charts. We did unbelievable.
Yeah, we did go to some of those stations too. And I remember one in particular we went to, the mob was so bad they were getting knocked in the head by the cops by their batons and their. I got stabbed with a pair of scissors in the back of the neck.
Were they going to cut your hair? Or
yes.
What? Wow.
So, in other words, this place was horrible. Here's the first place anybody liked us like that. That amount of people.
I remember Rolling Stone magazine was there, and they came up to do an interview at the hotel. And I remember them they interviewed me or something, and then and then when it came out, it was like Robin depressed in Japan or something like that. Like, because it was sort of in a way, because we couldn't go anywhere.
You guys only thought you wanted to be the Beatles.
The adulation and the appreciation for our music was like, this is, you know, this is heaven. And in 78, when we went over there the first time, that was like, if you say you're going to Japan on a tour, that was like you're landing on the moon.
It was the other side of the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that was before we did the shows. I mean, when the shows were just the same, pandemoniums and stuff going on.
Everything sold out. And we played.
People
we
were diving off the balconies.
We were there. There's a video of us, one of the shows at Budokan, and one of the ones that we did during Ain't That a Shame, we did it both on the 28th of April and the 30th of April. One of them, we used the version that you hear on the record from the one that the girl didn't jump from the balcony onto the stage and grab me. She was trying to get Robin, but she got me instead. Right.
I think so, I've seen that clip.
Yeah, so.
Well, you're going to play that song for us. Before we get too far away from the girl, the balcony, give us that tune, guys.
You got
if you
it.
Would.
Ain't that a shame?
Ain't That a Shame from Cheap Trick on Sound Opinions. Now, it's listed as Ain't That a Shame, but talk about how you came to that Fats Domino classic, because it's not something that I'm sure a lot of bands were familiar with in the late 70s.
And what it's really called.
Well, it's really, the original title is Ain't It a Shame, that Fats Domino did, I think it was 1955 or something like that. And it, through the years, it got changed to Ain't That a Shame. But we were asked to play, can you guys do a cover song when we were in Japan? And we said, well, we'd done Roxy Music covers, we'd done all kinds of different family. We've done Pado. We did all kinds of stuff that usually B-sides, stuff that people hadn't heard, you know. But we
that Lennon solo.
We like the John Lennon from the rock and roll album. That's where our version came from.
Yeah, actually, it came from the K-Tel version of it. The version that came on TV for sale came out first,
right?
So of course we bought that. You know, that was one song we thought, well, that's a great version. Let's augment that to fit us, to suit us. You know.
You made me cry. Said
I'm sure a lot of people who heard that song and made it a hit had no idea that there was an original version out there recorded by this New Orleans R&B piano player in the 50s.
I still love the Fats. Yeah. He loved Cheap Trick, too.
What did he say? What was it like the first time you met
him? Well, we were
him,
in Detroit, and his manager came
no,
up.
No, it was at Salt Lake City.
Oh, Salt Lake City.
Salt Lake City.
There's a little difference there.
Well, you know, and we tour a lot. We were in Salt Lake City, and we're backstage, and all of a sudden somebody said, here's somebody who wants to meet you. And in walks this guy, and he says, hi, I'm Fats Domino's manager. Fats loves your version of Ain't That a Shame. And back in 55, when we got a gold record, the artist got one and the producer got one. That's all they made. And here's the gold 45 of Ain't It a Shame. And he gave it to us, and we drew straws for it. How cool is that? I mean, you can't even make up junk like that.
We'll be back with more from Cheap Trick and live at Budokan in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX. Later in the show, we're going to review the new album from the genre-busting singer and songwriter Janelle Monáe. You know, my heart, nowhere.
You're listening to Sound Opinions. Coming up, Jim and Greg's interview with Cheap Trick. On the day of the recording, Cheap Trick and drummer Bunny Carlos were involved in a legal battle that prevented band members from addressing Carlos's departure from the band several years ago. Carlos also could not be reached for comment.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Cotton. My partner is Jim DeRogatis. And this week on the show, we're celebrating the 35th anniversary of the release of the live record At Budokan by Cheap Trick. You know, it's one of the best live albums ever released, and Rolling Stone magazine even had it as one of the 500 best albums of all time, period. Even though this album propelled this Midwestern band into the rock stratosphere,
They remain a pretty down-to-earth, hard-working band to this day.
We were joined in the studio in the midst of their tour by band members Rick Nielsen, Robin Zander, Tom Peterson, and drummer Dax Nielsen, who replaced the original drummer, Bun E. Carlos. We asked Rick about how they avoided the pretension and the overindulgence of some of their rock peers.
We're all fans. You know, it's like there was nothing cooler than meeting, having the guys in Queen like you, or you know, the guys in Aerosmith, they want to talk to you, or the guys in Kiss, the musicians always come to see us, which is like the coolest. And,
right.
And if we were up there being real pretentious and you know, put the salamis down our pants and you know, all the rock star dumb stuff, it's like a couple months ago, the Who played here, and Pete Townsend, I talked to him for 30 minutes. Nobody talks to Pete for 30 minutes because, he, you know, it's like we're kind of, when we played in Nuremberg in 1979 with AC/DC and The Who, Pete comes up to me and he says, "Hey, Rick, how'd you get that sound on I Want You to Want Me on the live album?" I say, "You're the guy that did Live at Leeds. What the heck are you asking me?"
It's like, you know, I was ripping you off.
It's just kind of funny that, you know, like I always say that we're the band that's like we won't steal your girlfriend.
You know, we might like take your guitars. But
yeah, we'll steal your guitars and your all your licks, but we won't steal your girlfriend. So they always felt kind of safe around us.
Well, that's a good cue. You're going to play I Want You to Want Me for us, right?
How'd you get that song, Pete? I want you to want me.
Yeah.
I Want You to Want Me from Cheap Trick on Sound Opinions. Now, you'd mentioned Townsend complimenting you on the guitar tone. And what's striking about that song, you listened to the original studio version of that
Please
song.
Please don't.
Obviously, you took it to another level when you were playing it live. And well, I know you guys
no,
are...
It, to it was level.
Kind of
we
the opposite. We went backwards.
Yeah.
You know, see, we played it live, and then when we did it in the studio, we went right out on tour before it was mixed, and the producer mixed it to the way it sounds. We never sounded like we did on that record. The tracks were recorded well, but you know, it was mixed not like us. You know, mm-hmm. You see us live at Budokan, I think it's like the first record that sounded like we did live.
Yeah, and it is kind of a raw, in-your-face record. And the other striking thing about that song is, you know, the audience singing along to every word. Was that a surprise? When
that's from the record.
Yeah, that's where the answer back, crying, that's... They did that, and they made our record better.
Yeah, since then, all the audience sing that part, so yeah. It's pretty cool.
Was there any audio sweetening after the fact? You know, through the years, people have looked at some of the classic live albums and wondered how much was tinkered with. You know, it turns out even live at Leeds, right, had audience noise dropped in.
I think we toned down the audience, actually.
It was too loud.
Because it was too loud.
Wow.
True.
That was the sweetening.
And the only other sweetening, I think there was an issue with the bass drum, how it was mic'd. So, you know, they had to fix that, so you had the bass drum.
Yeah, even back then, people always asked that same question. You know, and the thing about the audience got to be so sickening when they'd ask us that over and over again.
No, they really did like us.
Yeah. We just say, "Well, no, we took that from
that
another."
That was from Frampton Comes Alive.
Yeah, took that audience and stuck it in there, and that would shut them up.
Well, you'd hear the horror stories about exactly. Well, you heard it. It all came out after the fact that people weren't actually listening what was advertised on the front. But it sounds like this was a record that obviously was as live as possible. Also, a single record, 10 songs, very concise in a lot of ways. Was that...
Well, the record was only supposed to be out in Japan.
So we did it as cheap as possible.
You know, yeah, you know, it was like, it was never going to be out anywhere. And,
right.
And what they got, they liked it, so why change too much of it?
You didn't think it was going to do it? It was just a souvenir item for the Japanese audience.
Yeah, it was Rush, hurry up and do this. And the pictures that they wanted to use, Epic Sony, was the first Epic Sony release. The pictures they wanted to use, it's like our manager, don't worry, no one's ever going to see these. You know, okay. So that, you know, the picture of me on the back, it looks like I'm holding a yellow guitar. It's actually a blue guitar, but the lights were shining on it. And luckily, we actually played good, you know. And we'd played so many shows on our own. Luckily, we honed our skills at every club in Chicago and Milwaukee and Madison and Iowa and, you know, Minnesota.
How about another song, guys?
All right.
Got it.
Look out.
Yeah.
So that was Look Out from Cheap Trick on Sound Opinions. Now, putting together this record, Look Out was not a previously released song, or it was not a song that was widely known at that time.
Hadn't been recorded on album.
You chose to put a couple of things on this record that weren't out anywhere else. Why, you know, you got 10 songs to play with. Why put stuff on there that had not been released?
We liked it. It was a pretty good one. We liked that song. Ain't That a Shame hadn't been recorded by us either, you know?
WBEZ. I mean, you don't ever phone it in. We're at WBEZ, we're public radio. And for an hour, Robin, you were doing vocal warm-ups at the top of your lungs.
Yeah.
And, like, everybody's walking to the bathroom or the coffee room, and they're like,
I made sure the microphone was on so everybody could hear me.
What? But that's so much. I mean, you know, you don't phone it in. It's like you didn't just roll out of the cab, and you guys care about every show you play, which is extraordinary to me after 35 years.
I wanted to leave here an hour ago, but you guys keep yakking, so what are you going to do?
You can't leave. We want to get another song.
It's true, though. The older I get as a singer, it's harder and harder all the time. And, I used to be able to roll out of bed and after staying up all night.
And debauchery.
Yes, it didn't matter, but now I have to take care of myself a little bit.
We're going to get one more song from you. What's it going to be?
This is the first song on our third album.
And it's like this has been covered by, let's see, who did Dave Grohl, Marilyn Manson, and Green Day. And because of the lyric, because every person we've ever met thinks their parents are weird.
Surrender from Cheap Trick on Sound Opinions. We have to say goodbye to Cheap Trick, but it's been a pleasure, guys. Rick Nielsen, Robin Zander, Tom Peterson, Dax Nielsen. Thanks so much, guys, for coming in.
Our pleasure.
Now we want to hear from you. What is your favorite live album? Does Live at Budokan take you back to 78? Share your thoughts on that or anything under the rock and roll sun at 888-859-1800. Coming up on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX, Greg and I review the new album from Janelle Monáe, and I drop a quarter in the Desert Island Jukebox.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot with Jim DeRogatis, and that's the track called Dance Apocalyptic from the new Janelle Monáe album, The Electric Lady. She was born Janelle Robinson 27 years ago in Kansas City, Kansas, where she was kind of like a little theater nerd, but she wasn't really turned on by the whole idea of a conventional Broadway type of career. So she ended up in Atlanta and started working with members of Outkast, and they included her in their 2006 movie, Idlewild. While there, she forged something called the Wonderland Arts Society and started accumulating all these different friends from various aspects of the arts world and started making music. First EP came out in 2007 called the Metropolis Suite, part of what she called an ambitious science fiction project that was going to be revolving around this alter ego that she created for herself named Cindy Mayweather. This caught the attention of Sean Diddy Combs, who signed her to his Bad Boy label. And in 2010, Monáe returned with the Arc Android, a fantastic record. It was my number one album of that year. Since then, you know, we're talking about 6 Grammy nominations. She sang on that huge hit by Fun in 2012, We Are Young, numerous tours with people like Bruno Mars. Now she's accumulated a lot of attention on this new record, The Electric Lady. She's got Erykah Badu, Miguel, Solange, Esperanza Spalding, and this guy, Prince. You're going to hear him on this next track we're going to play, Giving Them What They Love by Janelle Monáe on Sound Opinions.
I am sharper than a razor, eyes made of lasers, bolder than the truth. They won't be locked up in the system, because I'm on a mission, blame it on my youth. Too long, I've been out here on my own, now I'm about to bring it home like a rolling stone. I ain't never been afraid to die, like a man in the eye. I come to give you what you love.
Yeah.
That is Giving Them What They Love by Janelle Monáe from the new Electric Lady album. Prince guest starring on that track. And Greg, it's fortuitous that you chose that guest track with Prince, because I think there's a lot of similarities here between Janelle Monáe and Prince. They are both geniuses. Step number one, okay? They both have an all-encompassing vision of R&B or soul music or pop that includes everything under the sun. Prince, in my opinion, although he remains wonderful today, was at his best on the first third of his career when he had a band around him that would tell him, honestly, whether an idea was worth pursuing or whether it had failed, and would help him edit himself. Janelle Monáe, only really being, you know, in the recording world since 07, this is only her second full album, has never had that, and as a result, there are some excesses. Now, Arc Android, her first full album, was pretty much from beginning to end great, but there are 19 tracks on this album, and there are some real mistakes. At one minute, she's trying to do Edith Piaf French cabaret music. The next, she's Leslie Bercuse singing Willy Wonka songs. And I really dislike these little skits about a DJ talking about this android character of hers.
I'm calling you on the air.
What's up, y'all? I just want to say power up to the Droid Rebel Alliance and the Get Free crew.
Yes, yes, sister. Power up, power up.
For those reasons, for the reason that this could be cut down to a killer album, but it's a bloated one at present, I have to give it a burn it on the buy it, burn it, trash it scale.
Some of those criticisms were leveled at the Arc Android too, Jim. I see where you're coming from, and I had some of the same reservations about this record as well. I was trying to figure out why the Electric Lady didn't hit me quite as hard as the Arc Android. I mean, they're basically about the same type of album. They're kind of long and sprawling. But the Arc Android seemed fresher and newer at the time. On this record, the high points, again, are pretty darn amazing. I mean, Giving What They Love is an amazing track. Dance mm-hmm. Apocalyptic is a terrific example of, you know, you've got a ukulele in this dance music track. You know, she's doing these kind of audacious experiments with the music. But yes, there are weak points here. Some of these ballads, as you pointed out, are kind of mushy. Some of the funk is a little too polite. At 19 songs, 67 minutes, I would have wished for something more in the range of like 12 songs, maybe. The DJ interludes, though, I think she's trying to build a bigger story here. She's really working with this Cindy Mayweather character and this whole notion of being an outsider and a misfit. And here she's really bringing out some different aspects of her personality. I mean, she's making movies here. She's making novels in addition to albums.
Save the DJ for the movie.
You know, but I applaud the ambition of it. The whole idea, okay, now we've got the first bisexual African-American android pop star in the making. No wonder somebody like Prince wanted a piece of the action here. This is a really interesting character. But yes, I don't think it's her best work. It's not as good as the Arc Android. I love the ambition, but not necessarily the execution. It's a burn it for me.
I tell you, little buddy, this whole island is bewitched.
Remember, we were shipwrecked together.
As often as possible on this show, we like to take a swim out to the desert island. Jim has got the Speedos on right now and is taking a dive. He's going to pop a quarter in the desert island jukebox. What do you got for us, Jim?
Thanks. You know, I'm still mad at you from last week. You did this big build-up about, I'm going to play, you know, that song by the Saints, you know, Stranded, brings us into this segment every week. I'm going to play a song from Australia. I thought you were going to play the Saints, and then you play the Go-Betweens, who I love. But we've never really given the Saints their due, especially considering that for more than 300 weeks they've introduced the trip to the desert island. Who was this band? They had much bigger influence in the United Kingdom because they were from Brisbane, Australia, as being one of the bands that brought punk to the world. It has been said by none other than Bob Geldof that punk was invented by three bands, the Sex Pistols, the Ramones, and the Saints. It has been said by Nick Cave they were gods. That's how he explains who the Saints were. It was really two guys who met in high school. Chris Bailey, the singer, the songwriter, and later the guitarist, and a wonderful guitarist named Ed Cooper. They were writing their own songs. They were playing them at Ramones-like speed in 1974, way before punk was a thing, and they were raising the money to put out their own first single, which was Stranded. They produced
The second album that came a few years later on their own, 1978, Eternally Yours. Now, those first two records, everything pretty much sounds like Stranded. For the second album, Eternally Yours, they were as fascinated by Stax Volt in American soul from the 60s and early 70s as they were with this ferocious kind of rock and roll that they loved by bands like the MC5 and the Stooges. The fantastic lead-off track and their second single, Know Your Product, has this horn section in there. Now, horns and punk usually do not mix. Ska, horns, yeah, sure, but not in punk rock Ramones-style songs, and yet it's brilliant here. This is a soul song delivered with punk fury that rails at advertising. They later admitted, we were just rewriting Satisfaction. You know, this idea of being sold something you don't want. Smooth talking, brainwashing, never going to give me what I need. It just kills. The whole rest of the album is not as good as this, but this song and Stranded are just like as great as rock and roll gets. Here's the Saints, Know Your Product on Sound Opinions. I'm just sitting in my chair when a voice comes on, yes, don't you try, yeah, you feel all right. Got some green, new brown, and smokes, chill your head and clear your throat. Keeps you young and so in touch. Cheap advertising, you're lying, but never gonna give me what I want. I said smooth talking, brainwashing. And now I'm gonna give me what I need. And it's so this beats you clean, saves your soul and keeps you clean. It's recommended you spy a queen. Gotta improve your IQ, helping everything you do. It's economic, don't cost too much. Then that is the Saints with Know Your Product from Eternally Yours, 1978, My Desert Island Jukebox pick. Greg, what do we have on the show next week?
Next week, Jim, we're going to celebrate the Replacements. They're back together again, at least two of them are, and we're going to look at their legacy.
Greg, as always, we have some thank yous to say on the way out. Sound Opinions is produced by Jason Saldana, Robin Lynn, and Anthony Martinez. Special thanks to Adam Yaffe for helping record Cheap Trick. And one anniversary to note on the way out. In 1965, this week, Ford Motor Company became the first to offer the 8-track deck as an option.
On Sound Opinions, everyone's a critic. So give us a call on our hotline, 888-859-1800.
New messages.
My name is Alice Brandon. I'm from Chicago, Illinois. And I was listening to your show today on South African music. And I have to give a shout out to my absolutely favorite South African musician, Dorothy Musaka. Her album that she put out in 1991, I know it's old, but it's been a longtime favorite of my whole family's, and Pata Pata, especially that song. So there's so much great music coming out of Africa that most Americans don't know about, so thank you so much for highlighting some world music from that region. Thanks again.
Hello, my name is Jonathan Woods from Chicago, and I'm calling to comment on your South African show. I'm surprised that you didn't mention South African Afrofuturist and TED lecturer Spoek Tumbo. He's one of the most prominent and influential artists on the planet right now from South Africa. Also, you neglected to mention some of the dynamic rock groups over there, like Black Jacks, as well as the expanding rock and metal scene in general. Love the show in general, but it'd be great if you guys would have mentioned those folks.
Hi, this is John from Crystal Lake. Hi. Can't believe the recommendations for karate, especially since you had Nine Inch Nails on the same show. Ever hear of a little song called Head Like a Hole? Missed the boat on Nine Inch Nails while you have it on the same show as a karate guy, kung fu guy. It's pretty silly. You had some pretty good angry songs there that you could have recommended to the guy. Good fighting song.
This is Alan in Chicago, and I just was listening to your segment on the Kung Fu teacher from Highland Park, your doctor segment. I think it's one of the absolute best segments you've ever had on any of your shows. The whole thing was just superb, as human interest, as music, as virtuality. Loved it. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Messages.
To share your opinions on Sound Opinions, call 888-859-1800. We'll be back next week on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and distributed by PRX.